John, Bates, and a couple of the more military-inclined lead sweeps of the city and check the other prison blocks, while Rodney and Grodin secure the gate room and listen in using the Atlantis communications grid. Carson spends most of his time muttering in a corner until John shows up with Laura Cadman in tow, leaving her to bring Carson into coherence and give them all a little peace and quiet before Rodney shoots Carson himself. "Shepard," Rodney says, as he starts bringing up power grids. "You busy?" The sounds of shooting drown out the response. Then Shepard drawls, "Not really, Rodney. What you need?" "A muffle for Beckett. But if you can spare the time, I need you to activate a few more things." First thing they need is to get Carson in his lab and let him go as crazy as he likes. Early testing of the gene treatment on Earth had been positive. Surely the man retained enough sanity to recreate his work. Preferably now. A glance at Carson curled up in Lara's lap isn't encouraging, though. "We're almost done. Found some life sign detectors in the jumpers." Rodney rubs a hand across his eyes. This is more activity in a few hours than he's had for years. "What on earth is a jumper?" The conversation is briefly derailed by another round of gunfire, and then John is back, sounding smug. "For the gate." "Gate ships. Those little puddle jumpers." Rodney can hear the amusement in John's voice. "Hey, can you bring the West Pier online?" Flicking a few keys, Rodney sighs. "Got it. How's it going?" "We're almost done. Can Grodin get that manifest up? I've done a head count and we're still missing 10, not including the ones in the bays." "He is decrypting it." Rodney shoots a sour look at Grodin, who winces before going back to his laptop like his life depends on it. Which it does, come to think. "All the blocks open?" "No." John's voice changes slightly. "6 of them didn't get their heads out of their asses fast enough, so I'm leaving them until we decide what to do with them." "If I can interrupt, gentlemen." Elizabeth's voice slips between theirs. "I'd like to see you both." Rodney can hear her moving in her seat. "Have you gotten the gate operational, Rodney?" "A long time ago," Rodney answers, checking the shield automatically. "What's so important that we need to stop our very important work? I mean, some of us have more to do than lay around and..." "I thought," Elizabeth says, voice sharpening, "that you both might want a say in what happens next." She pauses significantly, then sighs. "Rodney, we're in this together. Let's figure out what we're going to do before Earth or the mainland figures out what's happened here. Conference room." She keys out, and Rodney hears John's breath release in a soft exhalation of air. "Wait there for me," John says softly, then keys out, leaving silence behind. Rodney finishes opening as much of the grid as he can, leaving the locked cell blocks locked, backed with ancient tech so that no one can change that but John. 80 loose is enough to deal with, he thinks, nodding at Grodin as he gets up, just in time for John and Bates to emerge from the top level. At some point, Bates has acquired serious weaponry and a vest, looking crazier than usual. Unhooking his laptop, Rodney tucks it under one arm and follows him up into the conference room. Elizabeth and the Athosian, Taylor, are already seated, and as John slumps into the chair beside him, Bates on his other side, Rodney begins to wonder exactly what Elizabeth means about what comes next. As it turns out, she's talking about more than the mainland. "They could still send hyperdrive ships," John says, while Bates and Taylor stare at each other down the length of the conference room table and are no help at all. Opening his laptop, Rodney hacks into the administrative database. "If the Ori don't occupy them," Elizabeth says a little dreamily, then shakes her head. "The Daedalus is scheduled to arrive in less than a month. 22 days, Rodney says, pulling up the manifest that Grodin has finally managed to decrypt. "The mainland's going to figure out something's wrong in a few hours. Grodin's playing at communications officer, but they're going to notice when the second shift arrives, if they don't get around to wondering what the hell happened to third shift. Mainland facilities don't have a lot of tech, John says unexpectedly, and Rodney turns to see the hazel eyes are almost green with excitement. Hey, I read up, okay? Not like there's much to do while waiting for sentencing. Stretching, John relaxes back into his chair. Conventional weapons, nothing we can't handle. Except numbers, Elizabeth says sourly. And 10,000 prisoners. John grins, and the lights seem to glow with him. Christ, when he gets John alone. Give or take a few, I really don't see us needing out here. Elizabeth folds both hands on the table, erect and focused. You have something in mind. I think, John says, waving expansively, that if Earth is having issues, we don't need to go back there. Tell her about Pegasus, Rodney, the original survey. Rodney flicks up a screen. Mostly pre-industrial, a few pushing into early 50s technology, a couple of others doing something vaguely at our level of development, but let's put it this way, nothing we can't handle. Surprisingly low population density, considering the abundance of livable worlds. Looking up, Rodney catches a fond look on John's face. Easy. Elizabeth nods, leaning back in her chair with a satisfied expression. Taylor and I were considering something very similar. Crossing her arms, Elizabeth smiles. It's a whole new galaxy, gentlemen. Taylor's informed me that Earth forced her people from their rightful planet, and she's very interested in seeing if we can do to rectify that. They have many contacts throughout the galaxy that they'd be happy to share with us. A whole new galaxy, John echoes, elbow braced on the table. And I take it, Taylor wants to be on the winning side? Taylor's eyes narrow, but Elizabeth's hand on her arm stops her in place. You suddenly object to allies? Not at all. But John smiles then, leaning forward to look at Taylor in a way that Rodney does not find amusing at all. I heard all about your world, all the way across the galaxy, Taylor. You and Holling have quite a reputation here, don't you? Taylor's head tilts. At least she's bright enough to hear the implied compliment. We do not tolerate weakness. Unlike humans, she seems to imply, with a glance at Rodney that speaks volumes. And the Ethosians are willing to make an alliance with us? Taylor hesitates, then nods slowly. For now, it would seem the wisest course. Her eyes flicker to Elizabeth. If you indeed plan to stay. Elizabeth looks between them with the look of a woman whose negotiations have gone extremely well, head tilting before she stands up. Dressed in the blood and dirt-stained prison uniform, dark hair ragged around her thin face, she still manages to capture the attention of the entire room. 10,000 years ago, Atlantis ruled the Pegasus Galaxy from this city. The dark eyes brighten, like John with weapons, like Rodney feels every time he creates a new bomb. They left it and lost it. We won't make that mistake. And Rodney knows exactly why Elizabeth Weir was locked up here. He can trace it in the glaze of John's eyes, Taylor's fierce agreement, even Bates's startled, absorbed attention. She created her own cult and built her own country, negotiated with the Goa'uld and the Ori, stood before more international courts than he can count, and they let her off scot-free every time. A woman that scared the Milky Way so badly they tried her in space and sent her across the galaxy to silence her. Even Rodney's caught in her certainty, but he reaches over, sliding a hand along John's thigh, jerking him back into the room, reminder and warning both. John's eyes flicker, giving him a quick glance of understanding before his eyes slip back to Elizabeth. What do you say, gentlemen? Let's see what Pegasus has to offer. John follows Rodney willingly as they scout for clothes, leaving Grodin and Kusanagi to take care of keeping the mainland oblivious to problems.
latest excuse is repowering the jumpers, which is completely plausible only if you know nothing about ancient technology. Apparently, the mainland is filled with idiots. The private quarters are easy to open, with John wandering down the halls, and Rodney is greeted with comfortable-looking beds, sofas, huge windows spilling early morning light in squares all over the floor. For a second, Rodney thinks bitterly of his tiny, cold room, the hard surface of his cot, then turns around, pulling John inside, the door sliding shut behind him. "Rodney?" John says, but Rodney pulls at the vest until John moves, letting Rodney push him down onto the bed. Instantly, John's eyes dilate, spreading his knees slightly before Rodney steps between them, pulling the vest sharply over his head. John has weapons everywhere, Rodney discovers, working open the thigh holster with fingers that aren't as steady as he wants, running his palm up John's inner thigh after feeling the tip of a small knife beneath the thin material. Another one at the small of his back, beneath his shirt, slicing his finger open on the razor-sharp blade, and an ankle holster holds another one. Christ, John! John licks the blood away, sucking Rodney's fingers, eyes going even darker, and his mouth makes Rodney think of how it will feel around his cock. They hadn't gotten too creative in the cell, but now? John raises his arms as Rodney jerks off the filthy top, taking in the collection of scars on his chest before straddling his lap. Tangling his fingers in John's hair, he jerks John's head back. "What's with you and Elizabeth?" John smirks up at him. "I like her." Rodney snorts softly, but the odd coiling in his gut begins to ease the smile in John's eyes.
"Really?"
"She's good at this sort of thing," John says reasonably, which is true. "Why? You want Atlantis?" Rodney tightens his hold, trying to ignore the flare of heat from John's easy words, the press of John's cock against his belly. "You do, don't you?" "And does he?" "You can have it," John whispers, and Rodney rides the buck of hips beneath him, trying to ignore the rush. "Atlantis. I'll take care of it for you. Go out, put a bullet in Liz's head, Taylor's too. Anyone you want. Everyone you want. Everyone here, if you want me to." And Christ, that's hot. The image of sending John down to the control room and watching him take them out one by one. That John would do that if he told him to. Then come back here and stretch out on this comfortable bed just for Rodney. It's as good as a ZPM, a nuclear explosion in unprotected atmosphere. Better even than the anticipation of watching Zelenka die. And such a bad idea. "I want it," Rodney admits reluctantly, as John's hands close over his hips. "We need her." John's head cocks slightly, and Rodney softens his hold, leaning down to brush a slow kiss over John's parted lips, tasting copper and salt and the warmth of John's perfect mouth. Pulling back, he slides one hand to the rest on the back of John's neck. "She's good at this," Rodney agrees, closing his eyes when John's mouth presses against his throat, soft and wet. "And if we're going to pull this off, we need her." The woman could get the Goa'uld to cut a deal. Wasn't someone that Rodney ever wanted to be on the wrong side of, this side of the grave. Rodney thinks dizzily of the labs he only glimpsed, the massive databases, years of research ahead of him, freedom suddenly hitting him like a speedball. "God, we can do anything." He grinds down into John's lap and feels teeth graze his throat. "Harder." John obliges, and Rodney tilts his head back as teeth sink into the side of his throat. "Anything," Rodney says dizzily, fingers digging into the back of John's neck. "Where's Sumner?" "Locked up," John says, against his skin, and then he pulls his head back, grinning up at him. "I thought we might need some information, just in case." "How's his knee?" Rodney asks, pressing his forehead against John's.
"Which one?"
"Christ." Kissing John, Rodney pushes him back on the bed. They don't have time for much, but he doesn't need all that much. Pull John's pants off, swallow him down quick and dirty, feel him shiver beneath Rodney's hands, unstringing his words into meaningless pleas and promises, drive him out of his mind, wiping out Elizabeth's speech and Sumner's touch, remind him... Rodney loves his work, loves the bombs he's built, the power contained in a single red and gold cylinder that he's created, the potential to end a galaxy that can be held in the palm of his hand. And John is all of those things rolled into one. Does destruction and power condensed and refined, wrapped in addictive skin, beautiful and dangerous and perfect and his. Rodney holds John down when he comes, salty and bitter, climbs up to rub his cock against John's bare skin, John's fingers leaving bruises on his thighs, and God, everyone that sees them will know what they've been doing, what Rodney does to the man who terrorized a planet before he was brought down. Mine, Rodney says, against John's lips when he comes, the world exploding in silver-white heat around him, looking into eyes as green as new leaves that know him better than anyone he's ever met. We won't always need Elizabeth, John says softly, and Rodney lifts his head, meeting John's smile. No, we won't. Rodney leaves John to shower alone, suspecting that if he stays, very little showering will get done. Finding his spare science uniform, he pulls it on and wanders back to the gate room, checking Grodin's work and smirking at the way Grodin fumbles the laptop when Rodney comes up behind him. They suspect anything? He asks, setting up his laptop. They're not suspicious, but they seem distracted. Grodin frowns down at some readings, making an adjustment in power flow to the East Pier before continuing. I think... He pauses, frown deepening. They ask a lot about a transmission from Earth. I think they suspect that Sumner received one and has not informed them. Rodney watches the screen of his laptop blankly. Find the transmission log and hack Sumner's files. I'd like to know what's making them so nervous. Stretching his fingers, Rodney opens up the weapon system diagnostics to see what they have to work with. So, do you have a plan, Shepard? Elizabeth's voice cuts through the quiet room, and Rodney turns to see John slumped against the stair rails, arms crossed, smirking up at her. Clean and still damp from the shower, he's changed into a black t-shirt and the standard pants of the guards, issued boots, though John makes them look like a little indecent and a little messy. Rodney tries not to stare at the gun in his thigh or slung across his back, and fails.
Always.
Picking up the bag and the vest at his feet, he comes to abrupt attention with a mocking look. Atlantis' third shift is reporting to the mainland. Elizabeth raised an eyebrow. Who's going with you?
Bates, a couple of the others. We only need enough time to land inside.
John pauses, giving Elizabeth an expectant look. And Rodney, to shut down their computers enough for the force fields to be deactivated. At Elizabeth's look, Rodney shrugs. I could do it in my sleep. They're not going to worry about activity from Atlantis until it's too late. Elizabeth's mouth twists, but she doesn't seem displeased. What's my guarantee you don't use them and turn on me? John shrugs expansively, still watching her with the same mocking smile. The same as mine that you won't raise the shields the second I leave. I'm taking it on faith. And the fact that Rodney has encrypted the shields to his personal code. John's head tilts. Rodney will keep in constant touch, and you can listen in on communications. I'll need to update some sensor information, and Rodney can hack into their mainframe.
It's not a hack if they don't even bother trying to protect it, Rodney says disparagingly.
And since when am I staying here, anyway? Since this is grunt work, and not for someone of your elevated intellect. John says with a warmer smile, eyebrows raised. I need floor plans, guard deployment, armory locations.
You mean everything?
Pretty much. Elizabeth nods thoughtfully. You're taking one of the gate ships?
Puddle jumpers,
John answers, pulling on the vest. Yeah. What makes you think you can fly ancient tech? You haven't been in the air for a while, Shepard. Shepard's head tilts slightly, eyebrows raised in amusement. Elizabeth, if it flies, I can fly it. Draping the bag over his shoulder, he gives her a jaunty salute that somehow manages to include Taylor. With your permission, Dr. Weir. Elizabeth grins back, and Rodney is struck again how she turns that on. No fucking wonder people would die for her. Have fun. Bring me back a surprise.
I'll bring you back a planet.
The jumper, God, only John would think up something like that. Flies like John's been flying in them all his life, and Rodney fights off an inconvenient erection as he pulls up everything Atlantis has on the mainland facilities. Besides him, Elizabeth's pulled up a chair, calm in her ear as John has small, terribly public orgasms over a mind-controlled ship and does nothing for Rodney's self-control. This thing, John says, voice husky, is like...
It's reading your mind, Rodney says dryly. Duh.
Better, John says, voice dropping, and Rodney gives Elizabeth a sideways glance, watching her cheeks slowly flush. Uh-huh. You have got to try this. There's nothing like it. Rodney thinks of Laura leading Carson off to the infirmary to help him relax. He needs familiar surroundings, she had said with glittering eyes, which might mean Carson just wants time to feel up the instruments, but also might mean she's going to pull a prisoner or two from the locked cell blocks and let him indulge in a little nostalgia. Gene therapy, he told her sharply, and she'd smiled, head cocked, and wandered away, Carson in tow. Have you thought about what to do with the rest of the prisoners? Rodney asks sharply, and Elizabeth's gaze clears, eyes snapping to him. He wants to say, keep your hands off John. It's not like he doesn't know what she does with her followers. But it might be a little premature to worry. After all, she has Taylor to occupy her. Tapping her fingers on the edge of the console, Elizabeth looks thoughtful. Keeping 200 people under control, much less the addition of whoever we want from the mainland, won't be easy. Rodney's holding out in the labs by the skin of his teeth. That's a few too many brilliant, dangerous people trapped in one area, and Rodney thinks uneasily of the blocks filled with ex-military. John scares them, he offers, pulling up blueprints as John makes a pornographic sound when the jumper does something new. Christ, John, we're trying to think here. Yeah, John drawls thickly, and that's not enough if we're still talking control. You have any suggestions? Several, but I think you can figure out the easiest way to control Pavlov's dog. Rodney stops short. Huh. Looking away from the laptop screen, Rodney sees Elizabeth's curious gaze. Pavlov was... I know who Pavlov is, she says sharply, arms crossed, but she looks intrigued. You mean conditioning? I mean, if our resident genius can engineer us up a small neural interface, we'll have a lot less problems with population control, John says, amused. An implant, Rodney says, intrigued despite himself. At Elizabeth's raised eyebrows, Rodney feels himself begin to grin. It's pretty easy, actually. A small bit of ancient tech set to react to certain unhealthy neural impulses. With a manual switch, of course, for more direct action, but... the ancient tech all uses a neural interface. That's why John's getting himself off, just sitting in the pilot seat right now. Hey! But it's not like it's not true. A little refining, we can use it as a more direct form of control. Now that he's thinking about it, Rodney's pretty sure he saw this episode of Star Trek. Can you make it? Making it isn't the problem. It's a lot of data even for ancient computers to calculate, but if the majority was manual control, it'd be a good way to silence dissent. And keep the science staff's collective mouths shut. Hey, by the way, John, Blacksley is Section 8. Gall, Kavanaugh, Simpson, I want them back in one piece, if possible. John snorts softly. They'll be wrapped up all neat in a package just for you. I have visual contact. Anything in their communications? Rodney glances at Grodin, who shakes his head. Nope. You're clear. I assume you have a plan and not just running out screaming and shooting your gun? There are some explosions and a few concussion grenades, but that's the gist. John's good mood is contagious. Rodney catches himself smiling and forces it down when he feels Elizabeth's gaze. They seem to want me at the West Landing, good or bad. Give me a sec. Good. One armory, all general administrative and private quarters, nothing interesting. Go ahead and blow that. You won't lose anything we'll need. I should have their computers wiped before they blow anyway. First goal will be Block A, lower priority prisoners. Glancing at a manifest, Rodney sighs. And no one terribly interesting there, either. Blocks C, F, G, and H. M, Elizabeth says quickly. M-K, and looks like your Lorne is in Y. Let's keep those intact. You have the light sign detector?
Got it.
John's glee is contagious. Rodney watches until Grodin gives him a quick nod.
Okay, you're in communications range.
Cool. John pauses. All right, communication blackout until we're inside. 3 minutes. See you on the other side. The radio goes dead, and Rodney sits back, startled with a sudden sense of loss. John's fine. John's the best at what he does, but... He's startled by Elizabeth's hand on his shoulder, and turning, he looks into Siri's brown eyes.
He'll be fine, she says softly,
and Rodney thinks of John's warm hazel eyes and quick, capable hands, and nods.
I know.
It'll be the longest 3 minutes of his life. John doesn't waste time on dramatics. 3 minutes on the dot, the gate room is introduced to the sound of something blowing up, a rain of gunfire, and John Shepard drawling, "Miss me?" Rodney breathes out and catches Elizabeth doing the same thing. It's weirdly comforting.
Not really. Please tell me you're actually getting work done, not blowing up things for fun.
I live for my work. There's a pause, and Rodney thinks he hears Bates in the distance.
Right, go for it, but don't do anything stupid. Drop the force fields, Rodney.
All at once?
Rodney is already pulling up the screens.
Or systematic. John seems to take a few seconds to think and commit homicide before answering, if the sound of a P-90 is anything to go by.
All of them. One-third staff terminated during the initial explosion. A breakout should take care of the rest of them.
Even from here, Rodney can see his head shake.
Stupid. No defensive measures in the administrative residential area at all. I could have walked in with a pipe bomb.
Have you got all the computer stuff you need? Bates is sitting in the C4 now.
Rodney glances at Elizabeth, who's already nodding.
Go for it.
There's a brief silence, livened only by gunfire, and Rodney weirdly wishes he was there with them. And that's just crazy.
The explosion is loud enough to knock both him and Weir back into their chairs, and Rodney grabs for the earpiece, massaging the skin of the back of his ear, where he still thinks he can feel the vibrations.
What the hell, Shepard?
From somewhere distant, probably the result of permanent damage to his eardrums, Rodney hears.
Cool.
Then, hey, you Kusanagi? No? Too bad. Turning his head, Rodney sees Elizabeth shake her head ruefully, but she's smiling.
John? She says,
don't eliminate the other prisoners if you can avoid it. We may need their skills.
Or other things, she doesn't say. But if she watched Carson going off to the infirmary,
and it's not like a lot of the guards survived John and Bates.
I'm not, John says, sounding aggrieved. I'm sending them outside to wait. Hey, Block C, and let me say, these are the worst guards I've ever seen in my life.
And how many prisons have you been in? Rodney asks, thinking that soon he should think of pulling up John's file.
8, if you don't include the Asgard Briggs.
John pauses. Now they understood security.
You still got out?
Faintly, Rodney remembers hearing about that on the news, but at the time, he'd been a little busy in court.
Anyone but me wouldn't have, because John can kill easily and fly anything that can get in the air.
Rodney still wonders what John did with that Asgard cruiser. It's not like that's a subtle machine to have lying around.
Okay, we're wrapping this up. I'm getting bored.
John sighs, sounding faintly disappointed, and Rodney hears the sound of many feet running, fairly close, followed by gunfire. The lack of screaming tells Rodney that this must be Bates' idea of incentive for them to move quickly. Their systems are toast. If there are guards left, there won't be much longer, and I'm starving. I say let them figure this out on their own, and we'll check out those who are left. Rodney, Liz, I need a list of your people.
All of M, Elizabeth says steadily, hands clasped in her lap, eyes shining.
Gall, Rodney says, searching his memory for the name.
Simpson, Kavanaugh, some other people.
Simpson knows. She'll tell you who to bring back. You'll need another jumper.
I can take 40, John says easily. The way I'll be carrying them. Liz, what, 20 of yours? Hey, Lorne! Another burst of gunfire. The screams are becoming something to give Rodney a headache. All right, packing everyone up for home. They'll be unconscious, so have someone down there with the sedatives and get some cells opened up. I'm not risking them out and about until we have population control ready. You up for some fast and dirty inventing, McKay? Rodney grins, leaning back into his chair. Please, give me an actual challenge. He pauses to listen to John giving orders. How long? Someone who is definitely not Bates says something about weapons, which John replies to with a grunt and, sure, why not? Another pause, longer this time. All right, I should be finished in about 2 hours, John says. We'll do a quick sweep for supplies and weapons. Anything in their inventories you just have to have? Rodney thinks about it. Bring all the computers that aren't damaged. Any ancient tech. That means anything that makes pretty lights when you go near it. Rodney smirks at John's snort. Anything that looks interesting. Got it. And come by Lab A when you get back. We'll look at some options while Elizabeth does orientation for the new arrivals. And the ones still locked up, for that matter. Elizabeth gives him a sideways glance, but nods affirmation. Good job, John. Bring them home. Yes, ma'am, John says jauntily. Rodney can almost see him salute. See you later. When John signs off, Elizabeth straightens, shaking her head. That was faster than I had expected. Rodney watches her smooth down the front of the prison uniform, mouth pursing as she hits a patch of dried blood, picking at the loose waist with a frown. Hoped it would be harder? The dark eyes fix on him, one eyebrow arching. I'm not stupid, Dr. McKay, Elizabeth says steadily. I can't run this place alone. Maybe you can with your people from the mainland. Though he doubts it. Elizabeth tended to attract religious zealots, failed sociologists, South American guerrillas without a leader, and terrorists in need of a cause. Getting competent security had always been a problem of hers. I'm monitoring all computer contact until they get back. And you know of my file, which I presume at some point you have read. You know I don't have a background in ancient tech. Relax, Rodney. At least give me the benefit of the doubt until I have people here. With a quick, charming smile, she moves off, dusting her hands against her pants. Where are supplies? I need to change. Near the mess, Rodney says, glancing at his laptop and tapping a few keys. Or tricorders. All the doors should be open. Thanks. With another smile, she heads to Sumner's former office. Beside him, Gordon tenses. I don't trust her. Never trust the soft sciences or a beautiful woman who can speak Goa'uld, Rodney says sharply. Monitor her, tell me where she goes, what she does, and how she does it. I'll be my lab. Anything goes wrong and you fuck up, we'll test out the gate's power levels on you first. Standing up, Rodney unplugs the laptop. Radio me when Shepard's back in the city. Aye, aye, sir. Rodney can't help the smirk as he turns away. I knew I kept you alive for a reason. John reports as ordered, still slick with blood and black streaked from the fires, grinning from ear to ear as he hops onto the lab table, thrumming with energy. It makes Rodney tired just looking at him. What you got? Christ, is he ever not attractive? You didn't shower, Rodney hears himself say, reaching out despite himself to rest a hand on one dirty knee. Did you want me to? John's smile widens, then he reaches across, tapping Rodney's screen. You have something. Kind of. Pulling his attention away from John, Rodney frowns. It's a little crude, but I can make something better when we've got things under control. This, he says, pointing at the screen, is the program the ancients used for interface with the computer. It reads intent, in a very, very general way. Luckily, this variation doesn't require the gene. But this part, Rodney points to his own quickly added code, is a little different. It has a direct link to the brain and sends very specific signals to certain sections. John's eyes light up a little as he reads it. If I'm reading this right, you plugged into the pleasure and pain centers.
set to certain unpleasant intentions, and a manual control, an override. Rodney says, enjoying John's pleasure. It's always nice to be appreciated. It can be individual, group. I'm going to need Carson to double-check and help design the actual delivery method and the best place for implantation. Once it's in the best of all worlds, it should fuse to the spinal column. Not easy to remove. John's eyes widen.
Wow.
Rodney crosses his arms, feeling smug. What were you looking for, hotshot? Pretty much read my mind. With another grin, John hops off the lab counter. Everyone's tucked into a cell nice and tidy, and last I saw, Elizabeth was telling them how they're part of a grand new adventure, or something. Scratching the back of his head, John frowns as blood flakes off. She's good. That she is. Finishing up, Rodney saves and closes the laptop. Rodin's watching her. So's Lorne. John's eyes flicker over him. You're frowning. Lorne's not with the others? You trust him that much? John raises an eyebrow. Guess who sold an Asgard cruiser on the black market? With another smirk, John shrugs. Bates is with him, and yes, I trust them both that much. If I didn't, I wouldn't have gotten him out. Rodney stares until John sighs, rubbing his neck. If they so much as twitch in the wrong direction, I'll shoot them myself, okay? Now, we have a little time while the new people are locked up and briefed on the situation. Let's get some sleep before Elizabeth wants to start a crusade or something. Rodney frowns but lets it go, making a mental note to get Grodin to watch Lorne as well. But the lab! God, all around him. The computers are fast, and he hasn't even scratched the surface of the databases. And food, John says, a hand sliding under his elbow and pulling him unresistingly towards the door. We don't have kitchen staff anymore. And hey, we should do something about that. But there's a lifetime supply of MREs. The door is opened for John with a liquid slide, and Rodney tries hard not to envy him the ease of use. And I need a shower, John says, frowning down at his shirt. Rodney brushes his fingers across the front, feeling the stiffness of the material. Seriously. They go back to the room they'd originally appropriated, and Rodney sets himself to methodically searching it for anything interesting. A laptop, some photos, a hidden cache of candy, an impersonal room, but then guards didn't stay here long. Stripping the sheets and blankets, Rodney finds clean linens and remakes the bed, then tosses a pile of unearthed clothes at the foot of the bed for John to go through. He seems attracted to the monochrome look. Piling the discards in the corner, Rodney sits down with peanut butter cups and a considerably improved frame of mind after a quick chat with Grodin, listening for the shower to turn off. John comes out wrapped in a towel, and free of dirt, Rodney can see the exhaustion coating him like a second skin. Drying his hair, John surveys the pile of clothes with disfavor. Ford started hyperventilating. I should think about feeding him. He can wait. Sitting back on the bed, Rodney watches John dress, approving of the lack of underwear. Hurry. Anything from Cadman about Carson? Speaking in full sentences yet? Rodney thinks of the two missing guards from where John had the few survivors stashed. He's probably fine. John snickers softly as he sits down to put on his boots, so Rodney guesses he must know too. Done? Food? You mentioned it? I'm holding you to it. Got it. Grabbing his holster, John straps it on, and Rodney takes a few seconds to watch John arm himself like someone about to engage in single combat with the battalion. I'm thinking we need to... John stops thoughtfully, head tilting as he looks at Rodney. What? Standing up, Rodney palms the door open, hoping John will follow. Suddenly, food seems like the most appealing thing in the world. Just, John follows him, though, eyes flickering down both sides of the hallway. The SGC on Athos. They check in here pretty regularly. Rodney stops, catching John's wrist. How do you know that? About once a week, John continues, eyebrows raised as he tilts his head. Or so. Oh, that's how. They checked in at night? Athos evening, something with the regular gate cycles. John pulls gently, and Rodney starts moving. So, should be today sometime. You break Sumner's files yet? No, they hadn't. And Rodney can't even fairly blame it on Grodin, though he thinks he might anyway. Not yet. We have access to the computer core, but not the command codes either. I've disabled all the SGC protocols I can find, but that doesn't mean they didn't leave a nasty surprise somewhere. Do they actually... Is it communication or visit? John shrugs. He leaves, but that doesn't mean much. It never took long, so probably data bursts for a report for Earth. Turning the corner, John eyes the vaguely familiar man hurrying by them with a wary expression, shoulders hunched, like if he moves fast enough and small enough, they won't notice him. Rodney makes a mental note on his list to find out who he is, locking the face in his memory. Actually, there was more than one last week, John continues, stirring them down another corridor. How the hell John is finding his way is anyone's guess. Rodney's got the route between the gate room, his new lab, and their quarters, and hasn't tried deviating yet. The abject humiliation of having to call Grodin to help him find his way around Atlantis tends to defeat his curiosity. More than one? Something on Earth, maybe. As they turn into the wide mess hall doors, Rodney takes a second to appreciate the huge windows and wide open spaces, stepping over a body and ignoring the smell of spoiling food. Keying his radio, Rodney follows John into the kitchen. Grodin? Sumner's files. I want everything he has and find all transmissions between here and Earth and here in Athos. Something could be going on, and I'd kind of like to know before it shows up and screws us. Yes, sir, Grodin says, not sounding mocking at all. But Rodney bets he's rolling his eyes. I need another tech up here. Get, God, I don't know, probably lost by now. That little Asian girl. Get her to help. And she's... What's her name? John says, touching his radio. Rodney's blank. He works in his lab, but damn if he knows much more than that. Miko, Grodin says, and Rodney passes it on. Miko. Bates, do a floor-to-floor. Little Asian girl, Miko. Get her to the gate room to help Grodin. Got it. King is radio off. John sighs, looking around at the food. God, real food. Not the crap they've been serving in the last month. The bastards was holding out on us, John says, and grins. Come on, I want to sleep before Elizabeth decides she wants a holy war. John gets about 2 hours, mostly due to Rodney taking his radio and hiding it as soon as he drifts off, one arm slung across Rodney's waist, head buried against his shoulder. If there's an emergency, and only if there's an emergency, Grodin will call, and Rodney's not sure if Bates or this Lorne knows the difference. Anything with Elizabeth? Rodney whispers, but John pretty much sleeps like a brick when Rodney's there, so there's not much chance to wake up to his voice. Still talking. Glorious age, bright future, she's been at it for hours. Grodin sighs. There were references to revered ancestors, but that could be for Taylor's benefit. Miko's taken over decryption. She's better at it than I am. Possibly true. She make any progress? Short data bursts, she says. Something about potential communication blackout, but without context. Grodin trails off, and Rodney nods, feeling John shift against him, nuzzling sleepily before drifting off again. Right. Keep me informed what she comes up with. Athos is calling in this evening, and I'd like to be ready for them. Carding his fingers through John's hair, Rodney thinks of his lab, but he can't quite find the motivation to get up just yet. Will do. Communications cut. Rodney closes his eyes, drifting off to the sound of John's slow, even breathing, the warmth of his body, and the fact that environmentals are back at normal and they don't have to live in a meat locker anymore. They open again at the sound of the pounding on the door. What the? Sitting up, Rodney shifts John over, mumbling unhappily, and grabs his pants, jerking them on as he goes to the door. Palming it open, he comes face to face with a man he doesn't recognize, but guesses maybe he should. From the startled look on his face, and the way he cranes his neck to look over Rodney's shoulder, he's going to go out on a limb and guess that this is Lorne. I'm looking for Shepard, Lorne says, about to push by. Setting himself in the door, Rodney pushes him back. And that would be a no. He's sleeping, he says. And what the hell is... A fist wound in the top of his shirt stops the flow of words, pushing him up against the wall, and Rodney has just enough time to think, bad idea, before the sound of a gun cocking cuts through the room like a bullet. Let go. Lauren drops him like a sack of potatoes. Rodney catches himself on a knee and a hand, rubbing his throat and looking up to see John sitting up, perfectly awake, a gun pointed at Lauren's head with very, very little chance of missing. Shepard, step back. Lauren takes a slow step back, arms out. No sudden moves here, and Rodney pushes himself up, shaking his head a little. John's eyes flicker over him briefly before fixing on Lauren again. You okay, Rodney? Rodney takes a few seconds to think about it, wondering if John will shoot if he says no. From the look on his face, there's a very good chance he will. It's tempting, but... Fine, though if your friends are going to visit, maybe they could, I don't know, learn some manners? We're going to have to talk about that, John says pleasantly, and even from the wall, Rodney can see his finger on the trigger. A twitch, and Lauren will be a dead man. Wait outside, Lauren. Lauren takes another step back, eyes never leaving the gun, and the door closes with a satisfying slap of Rodney's palm. So, that's Lauren. John sighs, uncocking the gun and lowering it to the bed. Lauren, you sure you're okay? Crawling out of bed, John walks over, thumbs pressing beneath Rodney's jaw, tilting his head up, peering at his throat for a few seconds before gentle fingers trace the sides of his neck. You seem okay. What did he want? Didn't tell me, Rodney huffs, but he leans into the touch anyway. I'm gonna like him, huh? When I get done with him, you will like him, a lot, John says with a smile, brushing a quick kiss against Rodney's mouth, or you won't see him again. Stepping back, John dresses quickly, frowning as he searches for his radio. Okay, in the bedside drawer. Right. Taking it out, John shakes his head. Okay. I'm going to go chat with Lauren and see if Elizabeth's still having a religious experience. You need anything? Athos should check in soon, so I'm going to the gate room. If it's just communications, we should be good. If they want to visit, we'll let Taylor have them. With a brush of fingers against his shoulder, John backs towards the door. Tell me when they call in. I want to hear it. With another smile, John goes out, and Rodney gets a satisfying glimpse of Lauren's pale face before the door shuts between them. Sitting down, he picks up his shoes and keys his radio. Grodin, I'm coming up. Have everything Miko's done ready for review. Also, thought, when I said keep an eye on Lauren, what did you think that meant? Not telling me when he appeared at my door? Grodin's quiet for a long second. Dr. McKay, you're fucking lucky I don't have anyone else right now. That will change. McKay out. Rodney spends most of the night with Grodin, disabling the SGC protections and defenses, slowly stripping out command-level code inch by painful inch. The SGC had never been able to achieve a good interface with the ancient computers, so the massive databases and upper-level computer functions were relatively clean, leaving Rodney to start rebuilding new protocols from scratch. His fingers remembered better than he does, pulling Miko from decryption to start work on the laptops that need to be evaluated, setting up a network between them to back them up into a single secure area before starting the process of wiping them clean. SGC runs with Asgard and Nox protections, and Rodney's brilliant, but that doesn't mean he wants to spend the next year trying to wipe them out if they trip a defensive code. Weapons control, environmental, defense, sensors, power consumption, and Rodney grits his teeth at the dazzling information just beyond his fingertips and forces himself to move on, not look too closely. He has time. God, does he have time? Elizabeth comes in for a little while, Bates at her elbow, and they talk supplies and scenarios for contact with Earth, while Rodney personally vets each laptop Miko finishes, writing new protocols to keep the city running, until he can get one of his programmers down here to work on an entirely new interface. They just copied the database, Rodney tells Elizabeth as she watches over his shoulder. Didn't bother setting up any kind of reasonable interface here, since they didn't need to. I'm almost surprised they didn't wipe the entire database, Elizabeth says softly, eyes on the screen. No need. The ancients were big fans of overkill. Lots of extra space. Backing up another laptop onto an isolated section of the network, Rodney starts reconfiguring, and Elizabeth leaves again, Bates a shadow behind her. Rodney doesn't think she's fooled by John's bland statement of security, though it's that, too, but she hasn't said anything yet. 6 hours in, Rodney frowns at his watch and touches his radio. John? There's a pause. Shepard here. He sounds breathless, and Rodney feels something tighten in his chest as he pushes the laptop away. Problem? Where are you? The gym. John laughs suddenly, and in the background, Rodney can hear other voices. A lot of voices. Setting up security teams, that sort of thing. Taylor's been demonstrating how thoroughly she can kick my ass. The sound of a body hitting something that's not quite floor interrupts, and over the radio, Rodney can hear John's breathing, fast and light. Lauren's enjoying quality floor time. Everything okay up there? Rodney frowns at the laptop screen. Just a lot to do, he says, which doesn't explain why he's wasting time on the radio when he could be working. Athos hasn't called in yet. How's Carson coming along on the implant? Rodney snorts. He's not an engineer, but he's working. I'll check on him. Look, I get we need to keep the population low, but if we want to actually use this city, I've got to get more people. I can get them, John says easily. Gate room okay? I'll bring them up. Which ones? Rodney mentally maps the distance between the cells and the gate room. It would be faster if he went to the labs, but... Gall? Simpson? Going to have a little talk? Even through the radio, Rodney can hear the smile in John's voice. A little explanation of the rules. There's some ankle monitors they use on prisoners who take them off-world on work detail or transported on the Daedalus. They'll do for a short-term solution with small groups. Check security and see if there's a way to flag specific people so you don't have to have them directly under your eye. Or I can get a couple people to watch them. Rodney doesn't seriously think that any of his people, after seeing John, will do more than nod hysterically and promise whatever the hell he wants as long as he puts down his gun. But John's got a point. Right, Rodney says dryly, catching Grodin's eye. Have fun with that. I'm going back to my lab and then check up on Carson. Radio me if anything interesting happens. Got it. Shepard out. The radio clicks off on the sound of Taylor's voice calling for John, and Rodney watches Grodin's head jerk down, concentrating on the screen as if it holds the secrets to cold fusion. Peter? Grodin stiffens. Dr. McKay, you didn't survive Colorado because I'm sentimental. Rodney waits for Grodin's fingers to twitch, slipping off the keys. Simpson and Gall will be up here soon, and that makes you expendable. I need scientists, but I can live with being short-staffed. Do we understand each other? Grodin lowers his chin, eyes downcast. I understood, Dr. McKay. Good. When Simpson and Gall get up here, brief them and get them started. Shepard wants security flagging on them. Find a way for the computer to identify them automatically. I'll be in the infirmary. Keep me informed. Carson, for a miracle, almost passes for normal in fresh scrubs and a white lab coat, various bottles and beakers and neat lines on shelves. Something's in the incubation oven, but Rodney honestly does not want to know what. Carson? Carson turns around with a wide grin. Laura is not in evidence, but Rodney remembers vaguely that she is former Marine, and Shepard had probably picked her up for security. Coming around the bed, Rodney glances into the isolation ward window briefly, then turns away before he sees anything he might regret. I thought you'd be lost in the databases, Carson says jovially, washing his hands in the ancient sink. Rodney watches bloody water swirl down the drain, the flicker of bitterness, as the water turns off with a thought. Carson has the gene. John has the gene. Rodney thinks he could get heartily tired of not having the gene very, very fast. Rodney? Carson says, and Rodney jerks his attention back to Carson. Do you need something? A lot, and I need it yesterday. God, it's been 24 hours since this started, and he's slept less than an hour since. To start, the implant. I sent my notes with Laura. Can you make it? Carson rubs his chin thoughtfully, crossing to one of the few cleared laptops and sitting down. Pulling up the correct screen, he frowns slightly, then shakes his head. Possible, yes, but...
But what? I can find you an engineer to build it if you can do the surgery.
Carson turns his head up.
It's not that. A body rejection of artificial...
And you are a geneticist.
With ancient tech.
Look, this isn't a point of debate.
Ravni!
They stare at each other for a second. Running an absent hand over his face, Carson sighs.
Ravni, I've not practiced for over 4 years.
And I haven't touched a computer in nearly 3, but do you see me whining?
Figure it out.
Preferably before Earth and the SGC figure out what's happened and we end up right back where we were. Leaning into the side of the table, Rodney stares down at Carson until he looks away.
You want to go back into a nice cell somewhere far, far away? And hey, you're not enjoying actually touching your wife, are you?
Carson flinches.
This isn't a debate. It's an order. We have plenty of very smart people to help build it, and a few thousand to test it out on to get it right.
I can build the implant, Carson says finally, eyes flickering to the screen. What I can't guarantee is that it will be as reactive to mental commands as you wish.
I don't need it reactive to mental commands. A manual control will do more for direct action. I just want them to be sensitive to unfortunate turns of mind.
Carson's mouth turns down. You want them tortured for how they think.
Rodney raises an eyebrow. I'm sorry, did we skip into an alternate dimension where you give a shit? Don't argue purity of research and the advance of scientific knowledge being a higher purpose. It didn't work in court, and it won't work on me. Unless prison time was good for you, or do you even remember?
Carson's mouth tightens, but he's already turning away, flicking through his laptop, opening up Rodney's design.
Give me a few hours to build a prototype. I'll need a test subject, preferably someone already engaged in thought patterns we can use to fine-tune control.
Like, that's hard to decide. Just tell me when it's ready.
Rodney? Carson says slowly, and Rodney pauses, hands on the pad.
Shepard brought one of his men down for regeneration.
Rodney turns around, feeling a smile curl up at the corner of his mouth.
What happened?
Carson gives him a steady look.
Looks like he lost his hand to a door. I was able to reattach, but he'll have some weakness for a while.
Carson's eyes darken, and Rodney wonders if Carson's done any delving into their files.
From the look on his face, he might have hit Shepard's.
Said it was an accident with the technology.
Rodney leans into the door, arms crossed.
Then that's what happened, isn't it?
Carson watches him for a moment, then nods slowly.
I suppose so.
Carson, Rodney says softly, and the blue eyes flicker up. Don't try and grow a conscience now. Go play with your new toys. It's a whole new world we've got here. We're not going to fuck it up.
Pushing out the door, Rodney goes into the hall, touching his radio as soon as he's out of earshot of the infirmary.
Grodin?
There's a pause that lasts almost too long.
Dr. McKay?
Get to the infirmary and make sure Carson gets that prototype ready. And watch him until Laura comes back. I don't want him leaving his lab for anything short of the city sinking.
Yes, sir.